Thank you. I'm very excited to be here today. I've been working on this project for the past 4 years and as the research manager. And so I'm very excited to be sharing the preliminary results with you today. And I want to do a little bit of a test here. I know it's early on a Tuesday morning to see if you're paying attention. So some of the earlier presenters mentioned the rate of diabetes in America. Does anybody happen to remember what the rate of diabetes in America is? 7, 8, I hear. Any other guesses? That's it? 7, 8, okay. Well, not bad. I should say that I have no financial relationships or commercial interest to disclose. So in 2012, about 29.1 million Americans, or 9.3% of the population, had diabetes. And so some people say, why diabetes? You know, why is it that we're looking at diabetes? Why are all of us here in the room so interested in diabetes? Well, because it could impact one out of three people in their lifetime to develop the disease. So it's really important. It's also closely associated with metabolic syndrome, which is associated with heart disease, the number one killer in America. But the risk of death for adults with diabetes is 50% higher than for adults without diabetes. So it's an important thing to be looking at and trying to figure out how to better manage. Furthermore, the costs for medical costs and lost work and wages for people diagnosed is $245 billion. So that's a little more than half of our current federal budget deficit. If we could get that amount back, that would be awesome, right? So we really need to do something to try to combat type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is the one that is associated with overweight, also blindness, kidney failure, heart disease, stroke, and amputation. So very serious illness. But the good news from the CDC is that you can manage diabetes, right? You just work with a health professional, eat healthy, and be physically active. Move more, eat less, right? It's easy, right? No, it's not so easy. It's actually a lot of work. It's really hard, as some of my earlier co-presenters have said. It's not so easy to help people. We're very dubious about whether or not people will be able to eat healthier and be physically active. Have our cultural norms, eat in our particular ways of eating or have very busy lifestyles. So it's not so easy. So researchers have been working for a long time. How many of you have heard of the Look Ahead study? Just a few. Okay, just a few people have heard of the Look Ahead study. So I worked on the Look Ahead study in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I worked at University of Minnesota for 3 years as a lifestyle coach on the Look Ahead study. It's a nationwide study funded by the National Institute for Diabetes, Digestive and Kidney Disorders. 5,000 participants were enrolled across the country at 16 different sites. So you can see Minneapolis did have a Look Ahead site. Chicago did not in this map. So remember that for later. People who were enrolled in the study already had type 2 diabetes, so not pre-diabetes, as in the last presenter, but they already had type 2 diabetes, they were overweight, and then they were randomized by a flip of a coin to one of two treatment conditions, either the intensive lifestyle intervention, and that was what I was working on there at Minnesota. So we worked with people weekly for about 8 years, meeting with them in groups, meeting with them individually, throwing everything at them that we could to try and get them to help them lose weight and be more physically active. And then there was the control group, the diabetes support and education. Those folks met in a group about 3 times a year with a diabetes educator to talk about things like foot care and meeting with their doctor, but also a little bit on healthy eating and physical activity, but 3 times a year. So recently, just last year, Look Ahead came out with their 9.6-year results, and you can see that those in the intensive lifestyle intervention did lose 6% of their starting weight. Even after 9.6 years, they lost the weight and kept it off. They did have improvements in sleep apnea, depression, quality of life, physical functioning, mobility, so lots of great things came out of it. But you can see the diabetes support education, people were also very motivated. They lost 3.5% of their starting weight. So in the Look Ahead study, we really selected a special group of people who would be willing to stay in the study for 10 years. And they had to complete food logs before we would let them come in the study. We did a behavioral run-in with them. We did a treadmill test with them. We did all kinds of things to make sure that they would stay in the study and that they were really interested in doing lifestyle behavior change. So this was, you know, kind of the premier nationwide efficacy trial. You can see that the diabetes support and education people, they also had greater use of antihypertensive medications, statins, and insulin. The other thing to know about the LOOKAHEAD study is that it was very expensive. So I'm a master's level trained in psychology, and my colleagues were registered dietitians, master's level exercise physiologists working on this study. We were all very highly trained people working at University of Minnesota. So it was like $3,000 in the first year and $1,500 a year per person after that. So it was a very expensive program. But it had some positive results. So how can we take something like that and translate it into the real world? Health insurers we see are beginning to cover the cost. So in the last presentation we heard, you know, how can this be sustainable? How have these small grants go away? How are we going to fund this? So could we get health insurers to cover the cost? Well, we believe as a research team that one way to get health insurers to cover the cost is to do the research that shows that this can be effective at a low cost, this can be sustainable, community organizations do have a role to play. So there are lots of barriers in Chicago, of course. You know, Chicago is known for violence and crime. We get the Chirac nickname, you may have heard. People work multiple jobs. They don't have enough time. They are too tired to exercise, too tired to eat healthy. You know, they live in areas that, you know, where they, it's just a corner store to do their grocery shopping. So could this work in Chicago? If people with diabetes were offered a group-based education program for free in the Chicago area, would they participate, and what would the health benefits be? So Ron Ackerman is my supervisor, is an MD, and his model for successful translation to policy is to try to find the right people. So we believe that people who already have type 2 diabetes, they are at high risk for short-term obesity-related problems, so they are the right people. We've done several studies on people with prediabetes. They're also another group of right people who are at high risk for short-term obesity-related problems. And then add on the right intervention. We know that LOOKAHEAD is intensive and ongoing. As was mentioned in the last presentation, you know, once these programs go away, whether it's COPD or weight loss, once it goes away, people, you know, they go back to their old behaviors. So these need to be ongoing, intensive lifestyle changes, not the quick fix thing that where they people drop 50 pounds and then gain it all back again a couple months later. You also need a scalable delivery model. So what we've worked on with our diabetes prevention is working with YMCAs. So they are a nationwide organization you can find anywhere across the country. They're accessible. They're in low-income communities. They're in urban. They're in rural. And then they also already are doing some coordination with medical care. They already work with primary care providers and work with cancer patients on the LiveStrong program. They already work with arthritis patients and doing water aerobics programs. So they are a scalable delivery model. So we believe if you have the right people, right intervention, and the right model, then you can get cost-effective population-based prevention and prove to funders that this is sustainable to fight. Finance and has valued health outcomes. So we worked with two local Chicago area YMCAs in underserved diverse neighborhoods. One was on the north side, kind of the Rogers Park, South Evanston area, and the other one was on the west side, West Humboldt Park neighborhood. And some of the reasons that we believe that YMCAs are already the right delivery model is that they are already trusted members. They already hire staff who are trusted members of the community. They already serve as liaisons between health services and train their employees on cultural competence. They already do health education and informal counseling and social support. So the community health workers that we worked with at the YMCAs were required to have a high school diploma, at least 1 year of prior experience teaching wellness-related classes with some basic knowledge of health, nutrition, and fitness. They needed, as judged by their YMCA supervisor, to have the interpersonal skills to lead a group. That's not an easy thing to do, so we needed to make sure that they had that. And then the YMCA requires certifications of all their employees, like CPR, first aid. So they were hired, trained, and supervised for the YMCA. So they were not volunteer. They were paid through a subcontract on our grant to the YMCA. And then in our previous diabetes prevention studies, we've developed a model of monitoring fidelity and program delivery. And basically that involves having a checklist for each session of a particular content and the way it's delivered, and also some qualitative feedback. So we would have the instructors observe each other's sessions and fill out a checklist for each session. So that's how we monitored fidelity. And then we worked with the YMCA of the USA and some staff that we had worked with on our diabetes prevention studies to train the staff at Northwestern. So the YMCA staff came to Northwestern over 2.5 days, and we did an in-person training. And then they have annual one-day trainings after that. It was adapted from our prior training courses that we use for diabetes prevention. And everybody who came to the training received an operations manual, handouts, toolkits like measuring cups, scales, food labels. And then instructors agreed not to alter the program content without the permission of Northwestern. So I already mentioned one of the main adaptation that we made to the LOOKAHEAD program. Instead of being delivered by master's level folks like myself, it was delivered by YMCA staff. But we also transitioned to a completely group-based delivery format. So the individual one-on-one sessions were nice, but in order to cut costs, we decided to make it all group-based format. And then we eliminated the use of meal replacements. So when I worked at University of Minnesota, at the end of my session with people, I'd send them home with a pack of Lucerna or a pack of SlimFast, but we didn't think that was really appropriate for YMCA staff to be doing. So we just focused on the face-to-face delivery, cognitive behavioral skill-based training approach, using motivational interviewing, self-efficacy building, homework between sessions, and tools such as goal setting, calorie counting, self-monitoring of physical activity, diet, and problem solving. So we worked with physicians' practice groups to identify almost 3,000 patients who had type 2 diabetes. So we worked with Northwestern Medicine and then several federally qualified health centers within Chicago to try to target patients who were overweight with type 2 diabetes in our two neighborhoods that we were focusing on. And then we communicated with physicians to get approval to approach those patients and mailed them a lead letter. And then we called the patients. We had research assistants who called the patients and completed a telephone pre-screen, just making sure that people were healthy and safe enough to participate in the intervention. Then they attended a screening enrollment visit with the research assistant at one of those two YMCAs. We measured their blood pressure there, their height, weight, blood sugar, and cholesterol. And if it was, you know, out of control blood pressure, we just deemed that it wasn't safe for them to participate. So we had about 379 who attended those screening enrollment visits, and then 331 who were enrolled in the study. Today, I'm going to be able to present to you the 6-month results. We have collected the 12-month results and are currently analyzing and cleaning that data. And then the 24-month results, we've collected about half of those. And in the next 9 months, we'll have finished collecting all the 24-month outcomes. You can see at month 6, we had about 75% completion rate. So not as high as we had hoped, but we also have a fairly transient urban population that's kind of hard to reach. We did this in English and Spanish, so we also had some patients who were going back to Mexico for extended periods of time, and it was hard to get them in. Our 12-month outcomes are looking better. It's looking like we're going to have a little bit higher completion rate at 12 months, and that is our primary outcome, is 12 months, to see what happens at that time. So you can imagine with a group-based program, it's kind of hard to get people into a group, to enroll enough people to form a group, and so it takes a little bit of time. So some people actually didn't really start the intervention until about 3 or 4 months in. So they had just really started the program at month 6. So month 12 will be a better test to see what happens. And I want to emphasize that this is a randomized encouragement design. So participants were randomly invited to participate in one of the treatment conditions, but they were allowed to decide whether or not to participate in the intervention or not. So unlike the Look-Ahead study, where we really made sure that they wanted to be there and they wanted to participate, in this study, we took everybody. We wanted to see what happens in the real world. Will people actually show up? Will they come? That's what makes this study unique. So body weight was measured with a calibrated digital or balance beam scale. Secondary outcomes, we did finger stick blood tests to measure blood sugar and cholesterol. So you can see our two treatment groups here, the lifestyle encouragement and the standard care. We had the average age was about 58 years old, so that's about what you would expect for patients with type 2 diabetes. We had a pretty good mix of males and females, about half and half in both groups. Fairly low income population, not as low as some of the other presentations I've seen here for Chicago area, but about 40% had a household income of less than $25,000, so fairly low income. We had about a third white, a third African American, and about a third Hispanic, and like I said, some of those were Spanish speaking only. So then, again, here's my drum roll. Did people show up? All right. Well, we had 60% who did not attend a single session. But we think that that's actually pretty good to have 40% who did attend one or more sessions. So we had 33 who attended 1 to 8 sessions, and then 8% who attended 9 or more, and we're kind of using the same 9 or more sessions as in diabetes prevention as mentioned in the last presentation. So 8% of people did attend 9 or more of the sessions. And then what happened with weight loss? Well, at 6 months, we see that the standard care group actually gained a little bit of weight, but the lifestyle encouragement group did lose some weight. And you can see that they started out, you know, around 220 pounds. So that is encouraging to see that at 6 months, there are some changes in body weight. And then predicted probability of 5% weight loss. So if this were, you know, this is just a sample in our study here, but if this were put out to the entire population, we would expect that, you know, the chance of losing 5% weight would be 11 versus 3.2 for the standard care group. And I also want to emphasize that these differences, we looked across our different race ethnicity groups, and they were the same. There was no difference. So that was encouraging to us to see that it didn't matter if they were African American, if they were Hispanic, if they were Spanish speaking. This intervention, people lost weight across the board. So how about blood sugar levels? Well, like I said, we might not expect it just yet, and we're not seeing any results. That's the conclusion to this slide, is there's really no differences in blood sugar, blood pressure, or cholesterol at 6 months. So we may see some at 12 months, but right now we're not seeing that it had an impact on those factors. So one key point I want you to take home from this is that adaptation of the Look Ahead program isn't a model that's going to reach every single person. There isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. We believe that it's going to take a lot of different things, a lot of the things I've been hearing at the wonderful presentation this week with the built environment, the community. There's going to be a lot of different things that are going to it's going to take to solve this problem. This is just one particular model, but it does look promising of a scalable, lower-cost mechanism to help patients with type 2 diabetes lose weight. So like I said, future research, we're going to look at those 12 and 24-month outcomes. We also really want to look at the economic analyses, expected return on investment. We hope that that can help encourage funding agencies to be willing to pay for this. If they can see that this is not only something that has a positive impact on people's health and quality of life, but that it's low cost and will save money in the long run. So limitations, we're still collecting data. The model requires strong community organizations already in place. So YMCAs are in a lot of places across the country, but they're not everywhere. So there are models with diabetes prevention of other organizations who are also adapting this. So it's not just something that the YMCAs could do. Also, we do have missing data. Like I said, we only have 75% completion at 6 months. So I think what's really interesting about this is the questions that this a research study like this raises. Could participants be incentivized to participate even more without dramatically increasing the costs? You know, in Look Ahead study, we sometimes gave people prizes or tennis shoes or socks or different things to help them. We cut all that out to save money, but would adding some minor incentives in help, increase participation without dramatically increasing the cost? Also, I think we did run into some participants who just really weren't interested in losing weight. You know, they looked around and the people who live near them and they're like, everybody else looks like me. I think I'm pretty normal. Some people didn't understand, even though their doctors thought it would be a good idea for them to lose weight, they didn't really get the message that maybe I should be doing working on changing my eating and physical activity. So could primary care providers play a bigger role in motivating their patients? And then also, you know, recently the healthcare reform model extended coverage for diabetes prevention, but could this be expanded even further for a very high-risk group like people who already have type 2 diabetes? So definitely a big thank you to our entire team, research assistants and statisticians, and the YMCAs who worked very hard on this project as well, and then the NIH who funded this research project.